Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Glenn Tipton from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Richie Faulkner from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
This is Eddie Valise from King, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. Here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Hello. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. This is John Astronomy.
Yes, and I'm here too, Mark Striegel, the founders and hosts of Talking Metal, with you tonight on, I believe this is episode 472. John, we're getting closer to 500. I'm starting to get nervous because we don't have our big celebration planned yet.
Well, we will. We will do it in true Talking Metal fashion, whatever that might be. Yeah. But
we got to start talking about it.
Yep.
For real. I mean, by the way, I think we should do a, remember, like, people are still talking about the countdown to Chinese democracy.
Yes.
You know, whatever it is.
That was great.
7, 8, 9 years later, I'm not sure. Probably like 8 years later, actually. But
wow.
What if we did this? And I don't know if, like, how you feel about this, because I know it's, you know, you work with Ace and stuff, so I don't know if this is weird, but what if we did In Search of Vinnie Vincent? You remember the show In Search of Bigfoot and In Search of the Loch Ness Monster? In Search of Vinnie Vincent.
That's a great idea. I would like to know personally where Vinnie Vincent is, and believe it or not, I was on the phone with my girlfriend this morning, and I was telling her all about the history of Vinnie Vincent. So it's on my mind. I've been thinking about it. There's another podcast called the Decibel Geek Podcast that has some Vinnie stuff on it.
Yeah, those guys. That's Chris. He's real. Chris and Aaron, I believe, and he's real crazy about Vinnie Vincent. I believe Chris was so fanatical about Vinnie Vincent that he was somehow banned or blocked from the official Vinnie
Forum.
Vincent. Yeah, maybe it was the forum or possibly the Facebook page.
Okay.
Which I believe Mitch LaFon was also blocked too.
Wow. So it's very interesting. One of the strangest things that's revealed in the Rolling Stone article about Vinnie Vincent was that Vinnie's wife was formerly somebody who went out with Ace.
Yeah, and you know who told me that? Chris told me that. Chris from the Decibel Geek podcast.
Wow.
Now, is that true? Because
I don't know if that's actually true. I will need to ask Ace, but maybe that'll be one of the things that I could find out. That's what it did. It say that in the Rolling Stone article that
it was a former
girlfriend of Ace.
I'm not sure that that's ever been verified
confirmed by Ace.
You know, I mean, I don't know if that means, you know, Ace signed an autograph for her once, or they, you know, went out actually. You know,
right.
Once, well, maybe that's, or if they had a long-term relationship. I kind of doubt that it was a long-term relationship, but you never know.
Right. So maybe that's something we can ask Ace when we have him on.
Yeah,
but,
and I mean, sadly, both of Vinny's ex-wives are now dead, too, which is...
I know, that's terrible.
It's when I had Bruce Kulick on Talking Metal, he said, you know, there's just so much darkness around Vinny, even to this day, you know? And it's like, unlike, you know, there was a lot of mystique and questions about Axl Rose, you know, back when we were doing the Countdown to Chinese Democracy, a lot of questions and mystique around whatever happened to Jakey Lee. But, you know, both those guys, even though there were long periods of time where they were out of the public eye, there were occasional appearances. Whereas right. with Vinny, I mean, we'd have to ask a true Vinny expert, but there's been no real sighting of him whatsoever, I believe, for at least a decade, right?
Well, there was a press conference that for some reason I can remember where he was sitting at a conference room table and he was talking about some type of lawsuit, I believe, with Kiss. There was the photo that he took, and this still might have been 10 years ago, for the Kiss store in Australia where
the women's
footwear
looking shoe. Right. Yeah, it looks like he bought it at the Limited.
Yeah, and they had these pants that looked like they could have been ladies' pants. Now, maybe he was just...
Those had to be close to 10 years
ago. Okay, so that was
10
years ago.
At this point,
right? Yeah.
I mean, I think so, if not more.
Well, I know the guy Phil Elliott, who was mentioned a lot in the Rolling Stone interview, so we could definitely get him to fill us in on some of the stories. But yeah, In Search of Vinnie Vincent, it's a very interesting thing. What's interesting is that I think Ace recognizes that Vinnie, you know, was a great musician and did a lot of good things for Kiss at the time. So that's interesting.
Yeah. You know, but there's some people that are like, Vinny saved Kiss. And I don't really know that he did. I mean, I'm right at that section of the Paul Stanley book now. And it's interesting because that Lick It Up record, which Paul says in the book, he thought Creatures was a stronger record. But Lick It Up, it really did get them back on track in the 80s. So, but I don't know that.
Yeah, was it Vinny? Was the reason
yeah,
for that or not? You know, that's a question.
I don't think so. I personally think it was Paul's vision of, hey, we're going to, we're going to become an 80s metal band. And I've always said that, and I don't mean to, like, you know, honk my own horn here, but in Paul's book, he basically says exactly that. He says Kiss became an 80s hair band, an 80s hard rock band. You know, they kind of molded and fit into that. They wanted the MTV exposure, and they weren't sure that MTV was even going to play the video for Lick It Up, so they didn't spend a ton of money on it. And they could have, but they decided not to because they weren't sure it was even going to get airplay. And MTV bought the Kiss Unmasking hook, line, and sinker and played the heck out of that
right.
video, you know. And
yeah,
then they played All Hell's Breaking Loose a lot, you know. And that's right around that time is when MTV started to embrace some of the metal bands, if you will. I mean, MTV never embraced like Maiden and stuff like that, in my opinion. But you know, bands like Motley Crue and Rat right. and Kiss at that time, you know, 84, 85, they really did embrace those bands and helped those bands become mainstream far more than I believe FM radio.
No, I think you are correct. And that was right at the time where I didn't have MTV, and that was only because where my parents lived, we didn't even have cable. And then shortly after that, we got it. I remember when the Animalize Live concert was on MTV and one of their MTV concerts, I had to have somebody in a neighboring town tape it for me on beta. And then they gave me the tape. Beta.
Betamax. Yeah, we had Betamax too. You're the only other guy I know who had Betamax.
I know. I was the only person in my neighborhood. I remember a friend of mine's dad, and I can't believe that, and my friend's a really nice guy and his family's nice and everything, but his dad goes to me, see this? And he had a VHS, and he goes, this is a Cadillac, yours Volkswagen. And he was incorrect.
Yeah. You've told that story before. I don't know if you've told it on the podcast, but he is incorrect because Beta is actually a much higher, superior format than VHS was. But VHSs were cheaper to make, which is why the movie companies and stuff liked them more. And they caught on,
right.
you know, they caught on and Beta never
yep.
really did. But we got some great guests today, John. We should actually
let's talk about the guests. Yeah,
it's in here. Yeah, we have Richie Faulkner and Glenn Tipton from Judas Priest, and we're going to get right into their interview in a minute. And we also have a guy named Eddie from the band King. And I want to tell you, John, a little bit about King. Cool. They have a great new record out called Burn the Serum. And that record, James, the Reverend James Rhoda from Fireball Ministry, produced that record. He worked on the record with the guys in King. And we're going to talk with Eddie from King today. And Eddie is the guitarist and singer of the band.
Excellent. Reverend James, he used to work with us.
He worked at VH1 when I was there, and he worked on a show called Pop-Up Video.
Yep. Remember Paul Leo?
Yeah, yep, they worked together on that show. Paul Leo stopped over at my house. We won't spend much time on this because no one knows who we're talking about, but Paul Leo stopped by my house in Maplewood like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. That's great. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, it's going to be cool to hear this interview with Eddie from King, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the interview you did with Richie and Glenn from Judas Priest. What a great thing to have the mighty Judas Priest return to Talking Metal.
Definitely. And Richie has never been on the show, right. So it was great to talk with him. I got a photo with him at Sony. Well, let's get into this interview right now. This is some great stuff. It's always great to talk with Glenn. I reminded Glenn that you and I had interviewed him at Jones Beach back in 2008, which I actually just found the pictures for from that interview. So I'll post pictures of Glenn and I. And then another photo of John and Glenn from 2008. And then I'll post a recent photo of Richie and I on talkingmetal.com in today's show notes. And he was much more relaxed. I don't know if you remember that interview, John, but it was like
right before he went on stage.
And he seemed a little tense to me, which I would understand because you know, he's about to walk onto the stage. He was much more relaxed and seemed in a great mood, funny, friendly, and Richie is great, young guy in his 30s. You know, we were talking about after the interview ended some of our favorite Judas Priest records, and he told me that his Judas Priest, I think actually I told Glenn in the interview, my favorite Judas Priest record is Defenders of the Faith. And after the interview, like, Richie pulls me aside and he's just like, you know, that's my favorite
record.
Wow,
that's cool.
You know, so it was really cool. And, you know, it's funny because Richie was probably like 3 years old.
It's pretty wild because I've seen a concert on television of Judas Priest, and I really think Richie has such a great stage presence and is a great fit to the band. And I just had no idea. I never put two and two together and realized that when those records came out, he was that young.
Yeah. And it's important to note, too, that Richie, with this new record that Judas Priest have coming out this summer, Richie was heavily involved in it, you know, songwriting wise, playing wise, and just a real strong presence on the record. And
very cool.
I believe Glenn mentions that a little bit in the interview, but he's more than just, you know, the hired gun new guy in Judas Priest. He is helping move them ahead, helping them recapture their classic sound. And he is, you know, to use a real bad pun here, a defender of the faith.
Ooh, that's
he is out there. He understands Judas Priest. He understands their history, and he is doing them good with this new record. And they have encouraged us to play a 90-second sound sample of the new song that we're going to do after the interview.
Cool.
But before we get into the interview, why don't we hear some classic Judas Priest off of the Defenders of the Faith record. This is Rock Hard, Ride Free. Then we'll hear from Richie and Glenn from Judas Priest here on Talking Metal. We'll be right back. I'm here with Glenn and Richie of Judas Priest. How are you guys?
Very well, sir. Very happy to be here.
Very well, also.
Well, thanks for joining us on Talking Metal. Back in late 2010, early 2011, as a fan of the band, it almost seemed like things were winding down. And here we are in 2014 with a brand new record, and it doesn't feel like the end to me anymore. It feels almost like a new beginning. And I just wanted to check in to see how you felt about the status and the future of Judas Priest, Glenn.
Well, the band, you know, has definitely been re-energized, and it's great when you get an album like this one under the belt, which we're all very proud of, and we're all excited by it. We love the songs. Yeah, it gives you a whole new outlook and a whole new angle. And you come in from a different place. So, yeah, things have turned around definitely.
Cool. And the new single is the title track, Redeemer of Souls. It's up on iTunes now, which I downloaded. It sounds wonderful. What are some of your other personal favorites on the record, Richie?
Well, we've got the first official single coming out on the 19th of May. It's called March of the Damned. And for me, that's one of my favorites because it kind of unites the whole metal community. You know, sometimes we look down upon, but we're here and we ain't going anywhere, you know, and we're growing every day. So it's got a great message. It's got a great Judas Priest style riff, and it's a great song. That's definitely one of my favorites. And that's out on the 19th of May, so watch out for that one.
Absolutely. The album is being billed as having a classic Judas Priest sound. And when I look back, Glenn, over your extensive catalog from Sad Wings of Destiny to Hellbent for Leather, Defenders of the Faith, Turbo, Ram It Down, Painkiller. So there's so many albums, but
I'm impressed. I couldn't remember all those.
A lot of them have different sounds. I mean, you guys have definitely hit upon different sounds in your career. What to you is the classic Judas Priest sound?
I think Living After Midnight on British Steel. British Steel was an album we did very quickly. We actually wrote half of it while we were in the studio, which is very unusual for us. And it's just got a really solid, complete, satisfying sound. But, you know, every album is... we took a different approach on nearly every album, tried to do something different while still remaining, you know, as obviously Judas Priest. So we have made an attempt to give each album a different character whilst, you know, remaining in the bounds of what's acceptable for Judas Priest.
Cool. And what has Richie brought to this band that you guys didn't have before?
It was just a miracle, really. I mean, I've said it many times. I honestly believe that if we hadn't found Richie or he hadn't found us, there would be no Judas Priest now. So he's brought a lot of energy, youthful enthusiasm, great guitar playing, great member of the songwriting team. He's brought all that and more.
Excellent. Now, Richie, you are a player of Gibson guitars. Why do you prefer Gibson over other types of guitars?
I didn't start on Gibsons. But Gibson had there was just something about the feel of them, the weight of them, the quality of them. And as a tool, that was what I needed. I was playing in bands and clubs and, you know, cover bands around London. And that, to me, was the tool that I needed to achieve what I wanted to achieve. And then you become... you know, you develop your own tastes and your own personal, you know, whether you want a light guitar or a heavy guitar or, you know, humbuckers or single coils or an SG or a V or, you know. And they've always, I play all three of those. I play the SGs and the Les Pauls and Flying Vs. And they've all got something different about them, but are all uniquely Gibson. You know, you could pick them out of, 50 guitars. I could pick out my ones. They've all got personalities. They've all got little quirks, and they're like old cars. You know, I like the vintage guitars, I like the new guitars, you know, the leaps in technology that, you know, we're making now. It's just an incredible, you know, incredible brand, really, and it's synonymous with metal and heavy music and all music, you know, across the globe. And for me, it started off as just a tool that I needed to do what I needed to do, you know.
And do you alter the guitars at all? Do you put different pickups in them or anything like that?
Some I do, yeah. Mainly EMGs. I've got EMG 81 and 85 combos, and I've also got the new EMG 57-66 combos. But on some of the older guitars, I've got like some of the stock T-tops in the 1969 Les Paul. There's the PAFs. I've got this old, beautiful custom SG with you know, the original PAFs, three PAF pickups in it. So those things I'll leave in there. They've got their own unique sound and voice, and I'll keep them in there. But any mods that I do put in there pickup-wise, they're the EMGs. They work well on tour. They're reliable. They've got the sound and the definition that I look for. Other than that, they're pretty much what you can get off the, you know, you go and buy a Les Paul off the shelf, a Les Paul Custom off the shelf, and put EMGs in it. That's what I'm playing night after night, you know.
Very good. Now, Glenn, back in 2011, it was announced that you guys wouldn't do any more extensive world tours. Has that decision changed? Will you be doing a world tour?
We did state at the time that it was our last world tour. I mean, it takes a big chunk. I've said it many times. It takes a big chunk out of your life. But we never said we wouldn't do any dates as such, whatever they may be. You know, it wasn't the end of us playing live. It was just the end of a massive world tour, which it can be quite draining and certainly time-consuming. But, I mean, we've been re-energized since then. We've got a great album under the belt, new album. It's exciting to think of playing the numbers off that album, with Judas Priest classic songs. So things have changed a bit, but we weren't lying at the time when we made that statement. If we start to tour and it all goes well and we really, you know, absorb and love these new songs, so who knows what's around the corner.
Very good. That's exciting. And Richie, I don't think you were involved in it, but you and Rob recently were doing some work with Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. How did that go? Do you enjoy working with up-and-coming musicians?
It was a great experience, you know. I'd never done anything like that before, and I don't know if Rob had either. It was great to see younger generations, older generations, you know, which were fans of the band and music in general. What they did was they all learnt a song with a rock and roll mentor during the week. So there was Lita Ford was there, Bruce Kulick was there, Rudy Sarzo was there, and they were the mentors to, they put these bands together to learn Judas Priest songs. And then they come in, the groups came in, and they got to play the song with us. And it was great to see, yeah, as I said, new talent, you know, new kids, girls, guys, right across the board. And it was just a really enthusiastic and creative energy. It was really great.
Excellent. Glenn, one of my favorite records of all time, not just from your catalog, but really one of my favorite records of all time is Defenders of the Faith. Going back, are there any memories you could share about that record and working on that record, writing it, recording it?
Someone asked us the other day, I think, about Defenders of the Faith, and we struggled to really think where we recorded it because we did a couple in Ibiza, and they didn't. By the when we took the tapes back to America, everything was out of line. You know, the recording just didn't work. I had to re-record some of it. So at the risk of disappointing you, there's nothing that really springs to mind with Defenders of the Faith.
And the album after that, which I liked, but it was a controversial record to some of the listeners, was Turbo. Looking back on that record these many years later, how do you view it?
I like Turbo. You know, I know it was a bit different, and some people thought we'd chasing the commercial trial, but if you hear us play Turbo live, it's one of the heaviest numbers, you know, ever, and the crowd love it. They sing along with it. And it just needs, we've been brave enough to try new things, you know, with Point of Entry and Turbo and Nostradamus. And you've got to do it. You've got to pursue those new trials to get better. And it's something that's essential in a band's evolving status. And that's what we've done. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes people understand where you're coming from, what you're trying to do. Sometimes they don't. But you've got to experiment.
And it did sell well, that record, right?
Yeah, a lot of our albums, I think Ram It Down didn't start off selling too well, but eventually, you know, it sold, and Turbo was the same. People were a bit wary of it, you know, a little bit suspicious of it, but as time went on, they warmed to it, and they understood what we're trying to do and bought the album. So it was a slow burner, but it came good.
Very good. Recently, AC/DC has announced that they will most likely be continuing on without Malcolm. They're one, like Priest, one of those hard rock famous bands with two guitar players. Any thoughts on that?
I just feel for Malcolm and his family. You know, we toured with AC/DC years ago, who supported them in Europe, and they were great guys and very good to us. You know, at the time, we were travelling around in what you can only describe as a bread van, and they'd got a big tour bus, you know, and they invited us on there. And, I've got a lot of time for AC/DC. I think they've written some incredible songs, and they might sound simple songs. The simple songs are the hardest songs to come up with. They've done it time and time again. You know, they've proved that they're worth. They're a great band, and I just hope Malcolm makes a full recovery, and, you know, it'll be great.
There's so much Judas Priest history. You mentioned some of it right there, touring with AC/DC. Any thoughts on ever releasing, an official book? I mean, Iron Maiden have an official book. There's been, you know, so many rock stars now who have released autobiographies. Any thoughts on putting your version of Judas Priest history in writing?
It doesn't really interest me. I mean, I live day to day musically, and otherwise, you know, I very rarely go back and play old albums. I just look forward. I like to look forward to the future. And there's been a lot of books already on Priest, so to come up with our own that said something much different would be quite difficult. It would be interesting if we all sat down and pulled all our thoughts, but been a number of years. There's 40 years worth of memories there, so I'd have to dig deep for some of them.
Very good. And Richie, how has your life changed? I know that's a big question, but since joining Judas Priest, how has your life changed?
Well, I'm homeless. I don't have one. We've said this from the beginning. As soon as I joined the band, we were out on tour.
Right.
And since then, I'm either in the States, in the UK recording, doing stuff like we're doing now. I'm never in one place for any length of time, really. So it's very kind of, that's been a big change in my life. It's been an education. It's been a masterclass in, you know, so many different aspects of writing, to the industry, to relationships in the band, and, you know, how that all works. It's, you know, there's a lot more to playing the guitar than playing the guitar. You know, there's the industry and the relationships formed, and it's just been an education. And to this day, you know, you learn things every day, and it's just soaking all that in and being appreciative for, you know, for the opportunity that you've, one, worked hard for, but secondly, been lucky enough to been offered the opportunity, you know. So, you know, you pinch yourself every day.
Very good. And I know this album is not even out yet. It comes out in July, guys. You all have to go pick it up. But do you feel, Glenn, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but that this could potentially be the final Judas Priest record?
Who knows? I don't think so, because we've enjoyed making it so much and are proud of it. You know, it's exciting. It just spurs you on, you know, drives you to write more, maybe, to compose more, and be more prolific. So let's hope not.
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us, guys, on Talking Metal. We appreciate your time and look forward to the record Redeemer of Souls, which comes out this July. And I got to hear some of it before I came in to talk with you guys, and it is an excellent record. So, guys, check it out.
Now he said it.
That was a little sound sample from Judas Priest, their brand new title track, Redeemer of Souls.
Yeah, guys, what you need to do is support Talking Metal and support Judas Priest by going to iTunes right now and purchasing that song. Download it, again, on iTunes or on Amazon, and show Judas Priest that podcasting sells music. And John, you're a Gibson guy. Richie's a Gibson guy too. Man, we talked about Gibson for a good couple minutes in that interview.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that Richie is a fan of all things Gibson. He has some really great Les Pauls, and I'd love to sit and talk Les Pauls and all things Gibson with him sometime. So maybe the next time we hook up with him, I'll be able to make it to the interview. I'm not sure where I was at this point. I think that I was preparing to travel to Texas with Ace for the Texas Frightmare weekend that we had, and that was a really great experience. A lot of cool things happened.
Yeah, I want to hear all about that, John, but I do want to say that you missed a great interview. It was in that same building we went to, the Sony 550
right.
building we went to hear the Nostradamus
right.
record.
Remember that.
So what they did was I got there and they played me the whole new
wow.
record, Redeemer of Souls, which sounds great. And I can't wait to get my hands on it when it comes out this July. And then they ushered me all the way up to the very top of this Manhattan
wow.
skyrise to like the executive suite, which was just ridiculous. It looked like something out of a
wow.
movie. You know, everything was like there was like a buffet with chefs and everything. And went to this like sprawling big conference room with the most amazing view of
wow.
Manhattan's east side, all the way looking over into Brooklyn and Queens, and just beautiful, stunning, you know, 40 floors
Man.
Up. And that's where we did the interview.
That is very cool. Yeah, no, what a cool experience, Mark. And I wish I could have definitely been there. And thank you for doing this great interview. And definitely one of our favorite ever bands on Talking Metal, Judas Priest.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful that you and I will be next weekend. I have two tickets, which I got to line up a babysitter because my wife's doing this play right now. But I'm hopeful 1 week from today, it's Saturday, by the way, Talking Metal listeners, when we're recording this. But 1 week from today, it appears that John and I will be at the Ghost BC
Correct.
Show.
I like the BC.
You met up
yes.
with them recently, right?
Yes, I met up with all of the members of Ghost BC at the Texas Frightmare Weekend at the hotel, which I believe was called the Hyatt Regency at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. And I was down there with Ace, and the guys in Ghost are fans of Ace, and they stopped by to say hello, and there is a photograph of me and Papa Emeritus II on my Facebook page. So maybe we can link that. And if over at acefraley.com in the photos section, which is acefraley.com/Texas, you can see some pictures of Ace along with Papa and the Nameless Ghouls.
Cool.
And those guys are
I
cool.
I saw those on your Facebook
yeah.
page. They look
yeah.
great.
Those guys are really cool and really intense to meet live. And they really have a mystique about them. And I mean, I was a little in awe of the band, and I thought it was really, really cool. And Papa was cool. I told him that I would like to interview either him or the other members of the band on Talking Metal. So we're going to see if we can make that happen next Saturday.
Cool, cool. Guys, we have Eddie from King coming up in just a bit. I did want to remind you guys that we work with a company called The Midroll. Now, The Midroll basically provides us with ads. They've Audible and what was that? Hulu Plus and what was the other one?
GoDaddy.
No, yeah, we had GoDaddy, but that wasn't through The Midroll.
Okay.
It was what's the website? Squarespace,
right.
where sponsors that were provided to us by the Midroll advertising company. And I just want to say something about the Midroll. Help Talking Metal stay free to download by completing a short anonymous survey. It will take no more than 5 minutes of your time. Your answers will help match our show with advertisers that best fit the sensibility of our podcast and its listeners, like you. Listeners who complete the survey will be entered in an ongoing monthly raffle to win a $100 Amazon gift card. And they've assured me they're going to be giving away a lot of these gift cards, guys. So you have a good chance at winning one if you do this survey for us. We promise not to share or sell your email addresses, and we won't send you an email unless you win. Please go to www.podsurvey.com/metal. That's www.podsurvey.com/metal to take our survey and get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. I'm going to have that link through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com.
Excellent, Mark. I wanted to mention one more thing about the Texas Frightmare Weekend. I met some great Talking Metal listeners down there, and wanted to tell you all about that. Thanks, guys, everybody who came by to say hello. And I also just emailed you a photograph of a Talking Metal listener named Vincent Tyler, who sent in a letter, and it says, "Hey, this is Vincent Tyler. So great meeting you at Frightmare. Here's the pic of us. If you have anything for me to do musically, let me know. You're the best, man. Thank you for taking time out of your day to talk, Vincent." And Vincent sent...
Let me look at this.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He's got a Kiss shirt on. And,
oh, yeah. Looks like a young guy.
Looks like he's got a Randy Rhoads tattoo. Or looks like a RR and stuff. Either that or something else.
So he's a Talking Metal fan?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Excellent.
So that was very cool. And... So, Vincent, thank you for that. And
looks like he's got like an alien cap.
Yeah,
on,
yeah. You know what that is? I think that might be a skull. It looks like an alien, but like something from those Tim Burton movies. Like a skull with like, you know, almost like the Papa Emeritus II teeth, something like that. But either that or it's an alien. But Vincent, maybe if you're listening, you could let us know what that is. So anyway, it was really fun being down there. You know what's really strange is that when you're in an airport or the surrounding areas of an airport, you almost could be anywhere. Like if somebody would have said, "John, you're in Des Moines, Iowa," I would have believed it because there was nothing that came out and struck me that I was in the state of Texas when I was there. It was all very nice.
Wow.
But what...
Where in Texas?
It was like outside of Dallas, what I'm saying is it was very, very nice down there. But what was weird is like let's say you just fly into the airports of all these major cities, and then you just go to like the Best Buy or believe it or not, went to a Guitar Center. It was so funny. I don't even know if the people recognize that it was Ace walking in the Guitar Center, but me and him went in to pick up some gear for the hotel room. And, but you know, all these, I mean, of course there are some cities where you're going to immediately know what city you're in, but when you're slightly outside of the city, where most airports are, and you go to Walmarts and Best Buys and, you know, different things like that, they all look the same. So it's kind of crazy, but so that was my story. But everybody was very nice in Texas. The bar in the hotel was called Ace's Bar or Ace's Lounge, so I thought that was kind of neat. And but you know, of course, Ace is sober and not drinking, so he did not go to the bar. But that was a neat little thing that's what the name of it was, and that was pretty cool. The people at the hotel really embraced the Texas Frightmare vibe, and they all dressed up in elaborate makeup, which was really cool. That was the first time we've had an experience like that where the employees of the hotel also got into it. So that was pretty neat. They had a fun time, and everybody was very well behaved. There was no insanity, and it was just a really, really great event. So thank you, Lloyd, and all the people who worked with the Texas Frightmare Weekend. So that was that.
Dee Snider was there.
Yeah,
too.
There's I posted a picture. I forgot of Dee. Along with our friend Danny Stanton, who's been out on the road with us on the site. Danny works with Dee in a similar fashion to the way I work with Ace. So that's a very cool thing. And so it was nice to see those guys. Richard Patrick from Terminator, brother of filter singer Robert Patrick, stopped by. A couple of people from The Walking Dead stopped by. Really, really cool. Just before I forget, Mark, one wild bit of Kiss news that I happened to notice, and no one has seemed to have picked this up
yet. Yes.
But I am a friend on Facebook of Teddy Andreatis, who, of course, is Teddy Zigzag Andreatis, who was part of the Guns N' Roses gang and has also been on Talking Metal. I first met him at Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp back in 2006 or 7, and just hung out with him at the last one I went to about a year ago with Ace in Vegas. But he put up something on his Facebook, and it says, "Playing and rehearsing with Paul Stanley's new soul band. Man, that guy's got some bit of soul." So that is some exciting news, in my opinion.
Huh.
Sounds like Paul is put together like a little side project.
Yeah.
And they're not playing rock. They're playing soul music. So that's a very cool thing. But
yeah, let me know if you hear anything more
definitely.
About that. That is definitely interesting. Loving Paul's book. Did you
read
it?
I've been skipping through it. I bought it on my iPad, and then a really great friend of mine named Todd Schulich from the Pittsburgh area, who's a super Kiss fan, and Todd and I have been friends since 1987, like really, really good friends. Todd sent me a copy of it signed, which was really nice. Todd also sent me a signed copy of the Peter book. And so I've been skipping all through it. Like, I'm not disciplined enough to start at the beginning and read it through, which is what I should.
Yeah, you should. It's a really good read. You know, it's like any of these books, and I mean, you were involved heavily in one of them, you know, but you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I think in all these books, there's a lot of truth, but we all view the past differently.
Right.
Like, you were telling me a story about you and I hanging out at some club on a previous episode of Talking Metal. I had no recollection of it, you know, but it's funny, like, there's little things. I think Paul tells the story like he remembers it, but whether that's exactly reality, it might not be. It's his reality, you know. But like, he says something like about in 1981 or 1982, like Eric Carr was already listening to Metallica,
yeah,
which doesn't seem right, because I mean, I know that there were demo tapes being passed around, but I really doubt he was listening to Metallica in 81. Or even 82.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with you. I saw that, and I thought the same thing. And I don't think Paul intentionally meant to say something that might not have been 100% factual, but the thing is that it's not. What I got from that is that Eric Carr was kind of always maybe a little bit on the cutting edge listening to some different stuff.
Yeah.
But once again, like, I think unless you were like a fan of metal like we were, and you were trying to recall all the stuff that happened in the past, you might not realize that Metallica really didn't come out till a few years.
83. And I mean, even at that point, you know, a compilation album came out, Metal Massacre. But I guess that probably would have been like late 81, early 82. So, I mean, it is possible that he had that Metal Massacre record, but probably not.
Right. But yeah, I'm enjoying what I've read so far in Paul's book. Definitely what I'm going to do, and when I say I'm undisciplined, it's not that I'm not capable or that I don't want to start at the beginning. It's just there's so many things that I want to get Paul's take on, and instead of just starting at the beginning, I keep like drilling into it. So like, I'll be like, I wonder what Paul thought of the Lick It Up tour. So I'll figure out where that is in the book and read that. Then I'll say, oh, I wonder what Paul thought about the Farewell tour. So then I'll go to that point. And but what I really need to do is just start at the beginning and go through the book.
And on that note, perfect segue to wrap up today's episode. After I finished this interview with Eddie from the band King, I had the Paul book on me, and we did the interview in Eddie's van. And he goes, "Can I take a picture of the back of that Paul Stanley book?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. Why?" And he was like, "Well, when we recorded one of our songs, I think he said Electric Halo, actually, we did it at Dave Grohl's studio. And while we were there recording the song, the call came in for Dave Grohl and asking Dave Grohl basically to submit a quote for Paul's book, and that the studio was all abuzz about, oh yeah, Paul just called, you know, Paul's people just called Dave and want him to give a quote for the book. So he was actually taking a picture of the quote to send to some friends. I believe James Rhoda, Rhoda from Fireball Ministry is who he told me he was sending it to. So it's kind of funny.
That's cool.
So it all ties together. And on that note, why don't we do this? We'll listen to some of Jim Rhoda's music. Fireball Ministry, a great band, one of the original guests on the Talking Metal podcast. Yep. I went to see them play downtown, I believe at Knitting Factory.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage was in the crowd, Elijah Wood. It wasn't a super big crowd at the Fireball Ministry show, but there was
famous people there.
There was at least three or four celebrities there from what I remember. And of course, Peter Dinklage has gone on to do such great stuff. Star of one of my favorite shows, Game of Thrones. Do you watch that?
You know what? I don't, and I'm sorry to admit that I don't. And I know it's a great show, but maybe I will start picking it up. You know, sometimes I get into a show a little later and then, watch them all.
Great actor, and obviously he has great taste in music because he was at the Fireball Ministry show back in 2005, I think, in maybe 2006 in New York City. And so, anyways, we'll hear Fireball Ministry, then we're going to hear from Eddie from the band King, and then we're going to hear a little King to end the show. So just remember that James, who you're about to hear from, James is the guy from Fireball Ministry. He worked on the King record.
Excellent.
with Eddie. So here we go. Take it away, Fireball Ministry, into the interview with Eddie from King, ending with Electric Halo by King.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great week, guys.
Thank you.
Hey guys, we are here in the King Van on Broadway. I guess it's Broadway. I don't know where we are. Broadway between, no, yeah, 10th and Broadway, 4th Ave maybe. I don't know. We don't know where we are. Anyways, you guys are getting ready for a show tonight. Welcome to New York.
Thank you for having us.
New York.
You bet. The album sounds great. I'm really digging it, and I want to talk to you about the band history. For people who might not know a lot about King, can you kind of fill us in, the short version, obviously, on the history of the band?
Short version. Let's see. Tony and I were in a band. Pepe and Tony were in a band. Those both bands broke up. We decided to start King as a side project, turned into our main project.
Excellent. And the most recent album, Burn the Serum, right, is produced by James Rhoda, correct? Uh-huh. And how did you come in contact with James?
He poked me on Facebook, and I was like, oh, I'll add you as a friend. And then we we went on from there. No, Jim, that's not too far from the truth. He did contact me through Facebook, and he just, I think the message was like, I totally dig your band, something like that. That's his voice, by the way. And then I said, great, I love your band too, which I do. I am a huge Fireball Ministry fan. Love that band. I love your band, Jim. And we just kind of started, you know, communicating through there, and you know, he was interested in working on our album, and we were like not sure who we were going to work with, and we didn't know what we were going to do with this album at all, to tell you the truth. But when Andrew and Jim were thrown into the table, we were like, hell yeah, that's a no-brainer. Like, let's work with those dudes, because they know the know, you know?
Absolutely. So you guys are headlining this tour. How does that compare to being a supporting act?
We're still relatively underground, in a sense. Not very many people know of us, so we try our best to get our name out there. When we do supporting tours, it's better for us, because you know, we win over crowds left and right everywhere we go. I mean, we've done tours with Megadeth and Clutch, and we've done shows with Seether, and you know, I can't even think right now, but we've done a lot of tours and each time we gain fans, and it's cool. You know, it's a lot better to work when we're, you know, a band like us who's kind of just strutting around and rolling through the country and hoping that people know about us, you know. So when we do these headlining shows, we're like, all right, let's see how many people come tonight, you know. I mean, there could be anywhere between 20 people, there could be 320 people, you know. And so we just kind of roll the dice and see what happens.
You guys have obviously a lot of classic rock influences. Do you appeal to more of the older classic rock fan, or is there a younger element in your fan base?
We are cross-contaminating, you know, genres. You know, I mean, we've toured with In This Moment, which had a main support act, Motionless in White, and, you know, their fans coming out to the shows, you know. So we're getting these cool little, you know, these face painted kids, along with the older Zeppelin Sabbath wearing type dudes, along with the Clutch dudes, along with the Megadeth guys, you know. So it's pretty interesting, you know, a person who likes music for music and not just a scene of what that particular band is in.
I gotcha. And how hard is it as a band, you know, out there that isn't super famous by any stretch of the imagination, for you guys to survive on the road and make this your career?
It's tough. It's not what it's cracked up to be. You know, we're definitely working our asses off left and right. We say all the time, we do everything ourselves. We drive ourselves. We do our own merch. We set up our gear. We tech ourselves. You know, there's three guys in the band, and there's three guys on the road. You know, we don't have a merch dude. We don't have a sound guy. This is all the stuff we do need, but we don't have it. You know, I mean, we just got to do what we got to do and keep moving on. You know, the people ask like for advice, like, oh, what do you need to be in a band these days? What do you need to do? Like, what got you here? And it's literally just resilience, you know, because you're gonna get punched, you're gonna get knocked down. I'm tired now. Like, I've only slept a few hours, you know, and right. I'm gonna do a show. We're gonna do an hour set. And I'm going to be pumped, I'm going to sweat, and there's going to be, you know, energy all over the place, and you would never know that I've only slept for like an hour. No drugs at all.
Gotcha, definitely. And what is the best way that the fan base or the listeners of this podcast, Talking Metal, can support you guys? Is it to go buy the CD, buy merchandise?
You know, yeah, buy. I mean, just buy it. You know, go to Amazon, iTunes, all those outlets. FYE, I know, carries it. You know, come out to the show. We sell the album. You get it signed then, because, you know, you'll be handing me the money. You know? So, yeah, wherever you possibly can, just support music in general. Support bands that are working their asses off, you know? I mean, we need the support. I mean, we're like a dying breed, you know, real bands who are doing it and not necessarily making a living out of anything, but we're just trying to play the music to play the music, you know. Not that money's, you know, it would be nice, yeah. But you know what? It's not in the cards right now, you know. So we're just doing what we got to do, and hopefully people are attracted to it. You know?
Does listening to your music on a server like Spotify hurt you guys at all? I mean, I was listening to the album a lot on Spotify, and I've heard bands say that, oh, you shouldn't do that. You should go buy the CD, or even iTunes is better than Spotify. Do you have any opinions on Spotify?
Well, I mean, not that I know. I don't know much about any of that stuff, to tell you the truth. I know that, like, if you buy it on iTunes, you know, it is supporting us. Whereas if you listen to it on Spotify, I think it's like cents to every 1,000 plays or something, you know? So it's like, yeah, you could, I mean, that's the thing. You know, this internet stuff is cool for people who are not in bands, because I could go online right now, and I'm guilty. I do it all the time. Like, if I want to hear like an old Alice Cooper jam that I don't have in my iPod, I'll be like, oh, where is it? Here it is. And I'll listen to it and I'll get my fix. You know what I'm saying? And then I forget that I wanted to buy it, you know, and that's what people are doing. It's so common now. Like, that girl that just passed by, she doesn't give a shit about King or Alice Cooper or whoever the F she's even listened to, for that matter, you know, because she could go on YouTube. She heard it on the radio. What's that cool song? Let me play it. Let me Shazam it, first of all, so I don't have to, I'm a mindless, you know, just, you don't even have to research it. You Shazam the song. It comes up, you dial it in, and you find it on YouTube, and you listen to it, and you're done. It sucks for actual bands. It sucks for people who are trying to do this, you know, because it's just taking the dollar that it costs to buy the song away from us, you know. And, yeah, I mean, I would suggest that listen to Spotify to get your fix. But if you like the jam, buy the album, you know, because there's if you like one song, there's 9 more of that same song in that album from whoever band that is. You know what I'm saying? There's good stuff all the time. I mean, guys like you and guys like me will go out and buy an album, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, their single was cool, but I stopped listening to that one 3 years ago because the deep cuts are where it's at, you know? So that's what we need to bring that. We need to bring that element back to music, you know, where people want to listen to the B-sides and be like, oh, dude, you know, Never Say Die, Black Sabbath, that album was great. You know, I think it's cooler than, you know, I can't even tell you the name of that stupid album because I stopped. It's a great album, by the way. The Paranoid album. Paranoid. Technical Ecstasy is great. I love that album. Never Say Die, I love that album. Sabotage, love that album. You know, all the latest stuff, I love them, you know. Paranoid album, I've not listened to in years just because I'm like so tired. I mean, I listen to that album nonstop every day in 1994, you know. And I was like, God, I just, you know, but I always go back to Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, you know.
That's a good one.
No, I love it. It's one of my favorites.
What are some of your favorite songs off Never Say Die? Junior's Eyes, maybe?
Junior's Eyes looked up to the sky. That's a great one. You know what? Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die blend together for me because I always listen to them at the same time. So I think Technical Ecstasy, She Sits in Silence in the Midnight World.
All Right is on that, the Bill Ward song.
Oh, All Right? That's fucking Bill Ward singing on that one. Told you once about your friends and neighbor. Great song. Swinging the Chain. Yeah. God, you know,
Great. Put the album on. I'll sing every freaking song off of both those albums, Technical X and Never Say Die. As a matter of fact, there's this one rad thing that never happened was when we were on tour with Megadeth, Dave Mustaine was like pumped about getting us to come out and sing Never Say Die with Megadeth, and they were going to put it on the DVD. They just kind of couldn't do it because of, like, you know, Warner Brothers issues, yada yada yada. So there was a whole bunch of legalities, and but that would have been a great idea, right? It was a great idea. That would have been great. So we ended up doing another song with them. I think it was like She-Wolf, and that came out on their DVD. And you see us, you see our big fat faces come out on stage and sing with Megadeth, and that was cool. But I wish it was Never Say Die. Holy crap, that would have been awesome.
Well, Eddie, thanks so much for talking with Talking Metal. We're going to let you get some rest before your show.
Thank you.
And looking forward to the show tonight.
Oh, well, thank you for coming out and... keep on swinging that flag of rock and roll and metal, man. Thank you.